Commerce. We have two bills that we have scheduled today. The first one is public hearing for Senate Bill 158, so I will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 158. And if you, Ms. Braun, my counsel, who I can't call counsel, will give us the overview, I will appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 158 permits the Home Care Commission to elect workers' compensation coverage for home care workers and modifies the return to work requirement for temporary disability benefits to include employment by any client of the Department of Human Services who employs a home care worker. This bill, I'm expecting a small amendment on this bill. It has no revenue impact. It might have a fiscal impact. Statement's not issued yet. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. We have one person that's scheduled on the witness registration. That's Jeanette Burkett, I believe. Jeanette, would you please come forward and so we can take your testimony?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair Member Zansky and members of the committee. I'm Jeanette Burkett. I'm an administrator with Senior and Disability Section of Seniors and People with Disabilities Division, the Department of Human Services. And I'm here to testify today on behalf of, in favor of Senate Bill 158. As you probably know, or maybe not know, home care workers provide extraordinarily needed services to our functionally impaired seniors and people with disabilities who are living in their own homes and who have need of personal care assistance and supportive services. And the 2003 collective bargaining agreement with Service International Workers Union allows workers' comp coverage for home care workers, and we totally support the provision of workers' comp benefits for that workforce. The difficulty with our present situation is that a Department of Justice opinion our interpretation of the agreement requires that each individual client has to individually elect to have their home care worker covered by workers' comp. And it's a very unwieldy process to go through. A lot of our clients are, you know, fairly impaired, and it's a workload for the case manager to explain it each and every time. So this bill essentially would allow the Home Care Commission, who is the employer of record for the client, to broadly simply elect coverage on behalf of all of the home care workers. And that could just be done once. It would streamline the process immensely. And we very much would like to see that done. The bill also clarifies a process that we think would be an improvement. Previously, individual home care workers, if they were injured, would have to go on a return to work situation through workers' comp, would have to be returned to work for the client employer with whom they were employed at the time they were injured. And very often they're able to do modified work, but not necessarily the client employer doesn't necessarily have the ability to have that service that they could go back to providing in a modified format. And this would allow the Home Care Commission to essentially find a modified work situation with another client employer so that the worker actually could return to work, and it would really probably reduce overall workers' comp costs as well as allow the home care worker to continue to be employed. So we really support this bill. There are some amendments. It's attached to my testimony. Just a very small verbiage change that essentially reflects what I've just talked about. and we would really be in favor of the bill. So are there any questions I can answer?
Yeah. Panel, any questions at this point? I do have one. I just want to see if anyone else has any questions first. Senator Byer?
Is this bill identical to the one that passed the Senate last session?
Yes. It's not identical. It's identical to the one that was introduced in Senate Commerce Committee, and then Senate Commerce Committee had an amendment to change the words may provide workers' comp to shall provide workers' comp. We had the amendment to require workers' compensation.
I thought the staff measure summary, I thought, said that the Ways and Means Committee moved it back to
Then the Ways and Means Committee moved it back.
Okay.
So then it was like, I'm sorry, it's identical to the one that passed
the Senate
floor.
Okay. Yes. Another question, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Currently, is your workers' comp provided by whom for these folks?
It's through
SAFE.
Yes, it's through SAFE.
Okay. Do we know what the fiscal on it is? It went to budget or to Ways and Means last session. I'm assuming that there must be some sort of a fiscal reason why that happened.
The fiscal came from the requirement for the workers' comp. When there wasn't a requirement for the workers' comp, there wasn't a fiscal, I believe, last time. And when we required it as part of the Senate Commerce Committee amendment, that's when it was subsequently referred to Ways and Means. So since this bill doesn't require the workers' compensation coverage, I don't expect a fiscal on it, and I think that's
right. Vice Chair Byer, we don't see a fiscal on it because we are providing the workers' comp coverage presently.
So it's no change.
Okay.
This really does just streamline the process.
Do you know what the cost of that workers' comp coverage is currently?
Julia Huddleston, who is here, probably can answer that question for you.
For the record, I'm Julia Huddleston from the Senior and People with Disabilities Division of the Department of Human Services. Chair Posansky, Vice Chair Byer, I don't know the exact amount of cost. Our costs have mitigated over the past 2 years, though, and I do know the premium that we're paying right now, if we were paying a standard premium, would be right about 5% of payroll. We're on a state sort of pay-as-you-go system. But at one point it was 3.5%, then it went up to 7% prior to the beginning of last session, and now with more experience it's closer to 5%. So it's really settled down in terms of costs.
Thank you.
All right. First, I think Senator Monroe, Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you help me understand the meaning or the intent in the amended language on line 16, the insertion of the phrase by the Home Care Commission or its designee? Who would fit the category of designee? Yeah.
Okay. Chair Posansky, Senator Gordley, we currently contract DHS in implementing this agreement on behalf of the Home Care Commission with SEIU. Contracts right now with SAFE for workers' compensation coverage. We also contract with a third-party administrative firm in a three-way contract that in essence provides all those services for this workforce that an employer would normally provide for workers' compensation coverage. So completing the 801s, assessing work sites, modified return to work. Our intention here by its designee language was that if the Home Care Commission so chose, it could designate acceptance, making those offers in writing on behalf of the Home Care Commission to the worker, if all the conditions have been met.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I do have one, and it really goes back to the testimony where you said the Department of Justice interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement required each of the client employers to affirmatively elect to allow for workers' compensation. Without going into attorney-client privilege, I'm assuming that was their interpretation as to whether or not these individuals, the home health care workers, would be considered employees of the state versus independent contractors.
Hmm.
or do you know?
You know, I'm going to defer again to see if Julia can answer this, because I wasn't actually involved with this at the time that interpretation was made.
Chair Prozanski, I believe they went back to some very previous, early 1990s, opinions they'd issued us around unemployment insurance for these workers and things like this. And their determination at the time was that the state's more of a fiscal pass-through than anything else, and the Home Care Commission is the employer of record only for purposes of collective bargaining. And for everything else, each and every client employer was indeed the employer.
Right. It's pretty much what I said. Mm-hmm. It's based on trying to maintain that that line or that, as to who is or who isn't an employee. Mm-hmm. So hopefully the Department of Revenue won't apply their test to this area and we'll find a different answer. I'll stop with my comments.
You raised another question. Are these workers eligible for unemployment benefits?
Yes.
Next.
Well, do we have agreement on that issue?
Yes, they're eligible for unemployment benefits by statute that was in the late 1980s. The unemployment division had found them eligible for unemployment insurance. What the statutory change did was put the responsibility over on the Department of Human Services in the late 80s, because otherwise you had Medicaid clients trying to come up with unemployment.
One last one. What percentage of the workers and their employer have elected workers' comp?
I'm Chair Prozanski and committee members. I'm not aware of any that have not elected.
So 100%.
Anything else? If not, ladies, thank you very much. Let me ask, is there anyone else here today that wanted to give testimony on Senate Bill 158? Not seeing anyone running up to the front. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 158 and understand that there will be some work on amendments before this bill would move forward. Then we'll close it. And at this time, we're going to go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 559. And Ms. Braun, why don't you give us a little oversight on 559. Overview, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Then we'll have oversight later.
You guys can do the oversight.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 559 eliminates references to guarantee contracts and substitutes workers' compensation insurance policy as a method of proving workers' compensation coverage. There is an amendment expected on this, and it has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, we have a couple of different people that want to testify. I think what I'm going to do is just ask John Tulips to first come up and kind of give us the framework, and then we have a panel that we'll bring up that will be Sean Miller, David Lake, and Brian Miller.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Schiltz, the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 559. In 1965, the legislature created the guarantee contract as a means by which employers and their insurers provided proof of workers' compensation coverage to the department and the director. Now, an insurance policy, as you know, is a contract between the insurance company and the person who has the insurance policy. In workers' compensation, it's a contract between the employer and the insurer, where the insurer guarantees to cover the employer's workers' compensation liabilities. In most states, the workers' compensation insurance policy is the only contract that's required. In Oregon, we also require the filing of a guarantee contract, which is a secondary agreement between the insurer and the state itself, between the insurer and the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Under the guarantee contract, where the insurer again assumes the employer's liability for payment of compensation to injured workers to the director. It's a secondary level of insurance, of assurance. Over time, the requirement for this second contract between the insurer and the director has evolved into a system that, frankly, is costly to administer, doesn't always reflect the underlying insurance policy itself. It creates confusion about coverage and liability. In fact, I would be willing to bet that most employers don't even know it exists. And it delays benefits to injured workers when there's an investigation that's required about whether or not there is the presence of a guarantee contract. And I want to be clear about this. The guarantee contract system is unique to the state of Oregon, which creates a special challenge to multi-state insurers who do business here. The division has been working with stakeholders over the past few months to determine if a more streamlined approach to filing a proof of coverage system could be developed, where we could come into consensus and alignment about a simpler, easier way to assure workers' compensation coverage. And the results of those discussions is the Senate bill before you, Senate Bill 559. This bill eliminates the separate guarantee contract and instead allows insurers to report insurance policy-based information to the director to satisfy the statutory proof of coverage requirements. This is the same as many other lines of insurance, and it's the same of how other states regulate their proof of coverage requirements. SB 559 does not require anything new or additional from the insured entities, and by that I'm talking about employers and worker leasing companies. None of the changes proposed in Senate Bill 559 are intended to change the manner in which an employer or a worker leasing company and their clients are regulated. The changes are focused on the administrative responsibilities between the insurers and the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the director. The transition to a policy-based system, though, will require some significant planning. It's going to require some operational changes. There's going to have to be some data system programming because our data systems are all now set up around a guarantee contract system. It's going to require some rulemaking activity by both DCBS and the public, obviously, to allow the parties time for these activities. The bill specifies a July 1st, 2009 operative date. The director would be provided the authority to take any necessary actions to put systems and rules in place before that operative date, however, in order to expedite moving to this simpler and less costly system. Insurers will have administrative savings as a result of this bill, and those savings should be passed through to their insured employers. The division, the department, anticipates that we will also have cost savings as a result of this bill, and we would likely start seeing those in the 2009 to 2011 biennium after the new reporting system is fully implemented. Your committee staff has been provided with a few necessary technical amendments that need to be made to the bill. The proposed amendments are attached to my testimony and are primarily in regard to conforming amendment sections of the bill. The Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee has reviewed this bill. They reviewed the technical amendments, and they voted to support it. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have about this bill.
Questions?
John, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. Our next panel, as I mentioned, is going to be Sean Miller, David Lake, and Brian Miller.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sean Miller. I represent Liberty Northwest Insurance, and we're here today in support of Senate Bill 559. John gave you an overview of the bill. It is a streamlining bill that provides benefits to the system as a whole, and I mean the system as a whole, to the worker, to the injured worker, to the employer, and to the Workers' Compensation Division, as well as the our company, the insurer. Don't be alarmed by the size of the bill. When you get into, as you know, in workers' comp statutes, when we change the word guarantee contract, which the statutes refer to in the proof of coverage, and we go to this to a policy-driven system, the substance of the bill is really only on the first few pages of the bill. The rest of the, for the most part, 37 or so pages of the bill are just conforming, you know, with the name change of guarantee contract. So I know it seems like a very large bill, but it's mostly conforming changes. And so, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'll turn it over to David Lake, who's the Vice President of Policyholder Services, and kind of go through some of those benefits. As John said, Management Labor Advisory Committee did approve the bill and the amendments, and we hope to have those amendments shortly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am David Lake. I'm the Vice President for Policyholder Services for Liberty Northwest Insurance. It's a pleasure to meet with you this afternoon. Mr. Schiltz has very well described the nature of the bill. Let me just articulate a few points that I think are important for you to take note of. I wish to reinforce the idea that the approach that the state of Oregon follows right now for notification about the presence of a workers' comp insurance policy is non-standard. We provide insurance in a number of states in the West, and this is the only state where we have to do this. As a result, we have a unique operating system to do it, which is not electronic in nature. It's very manual and costly for us, and I don't believe that we are unique. While it's possible in the state of Oregon to file electronic copies of guarantee contracts, to my understanding, fewer than one-half of all guarantee contracts are filed electronically at present. Therefore, it's a highly paper-intensive system. The other point that I wish to reinforce is that the number of insurers who have been sitting at the table, the number of different parties who have been sitting at the table as we've discussed this particular proposal in the days prior to bringing it to you as legislation. Many insurers who write large and small within the state of Oregon participated in those discussions, as have a number of other stakeholders, including some employer organizations and PEO organizations as well, and without dissent, everybody was in favor of the concept that's before you today. Let me just quickly articulate. I provided some written testimony to you, and on the second page of that written testimony, I've articulated six benefits. Let me just quickly run through those. We believe there's administrative cost savings to this bill. We believe that the accuracy of the data that the state of Oregon has about the nature of contracts which exist in the state will be improved. Right now, the state does not necessarily know when an insuring agreement ends. What it knows is when a guarantee contract starts, so it doesn't necessarily know about the end date. We believe that it will provide coverage clarity so that all parties know exactly what the specific coverage dates are. We believe that it will improve the accuracy of liability and decrease the possibility of unintended liability without premium, something that exists in the system as it is today. We believe that it will allow for more rapid regulatory oversight by DCBS so that they can intervene in cases where we might have a non-compliant employer. And we believe, in the long run, that this can enhance the competitive marketplace in the state of Oregon because it will have an approach, an administrative approach, which is much more common across other states and the rest of the country. So we are very supportive of Senate Bill 559 and would encourage your support as well.
And Brian Miller.
Chair Pozanski and members of the Senate Commerce Committee, for the record, my name is Brian Miller with Farmers Insurance Group. And rather than rehash everything you've heard and read in today's hearing, I'll simply state that Farmers Insurance Group also is supportive of Senate Bill 559, and that fact is detailed in some written testimony that we've submitted to the committee this afternoon. Thank you.
Mr. Maher, you get a gold star for being brief and concise.
Thank you very much.
So with that alone, if it wasn't going to have amendments, I'd say we'd pass it right now. But I understand we've got some amendments. Let me ask if the panel or the dais, if there's anyone have any questions for the people at the witness panel.
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead.
Only it may have been more appropriate for Mr. Schultz, but I'm not sure. Do you have a copy of the bill in front of you? I'm looking at what I have is, I don't know if we have the same thing. It would be, I'm looking on page 6, but it would be section 5, subsection 4A.
That would be page 6, line, looks like line 6.
Yeah, if our page numbers are right, dealing with the powers of the director.
Mm-hmm.
My question is where the language has changed from allow for to require electronic transmission. It looks to me like this section is broader than just the electronic transmission of these guarantee contracts, but that we're also getting into maybe some of the claims processing area of workers' compensation, the filing of reports, claims, or other documents. And I'm not sure, and if either of you know that or Mr. Schultz might know.
Why don't we get Mr. Schultz to come back up, put that on the record. Notice that Sean was the one that gave his seat up so we wouldn't have to stay here any longer. An experience. Sorry, guys.
He's smarter than we are.
Again, for the record, this is John Schultz with the Workers' Compensation Division, part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And your question, make sure I understand it, is on page 6 in regard to subsection 4A, where we would be removing on line 12 the words allow for and substitute require. In regard to notwithstanding any other provision of this chapter, the claims or other documents, excuse me, I jumped ahead. Notwithstanding any other provision of this chapter, the director may adopt rules to require the electronic transmission and filing of reports, claims, or other documents required to be filed under this chapter. And I'm assuming that this is all under Chapter 656. Yes, it is. Okay. The idea here, Mr. Chair and Senator Avakian, is that we want to go to electronic filing of coverage. And part of the problem, as was mentioned earlier, in terms of our electronic filing of coverage now, has been the guarantee contract has made that difficult. And so by moving out of the guarantee contract realm, getting into what becomes really adopting the national standard around filing policy-based coverage, that we would be able to easily move to electronic transmission of coverage. Your question, however, is whether or not this would be then also requiring electronic filing of claims and other reports. And I asked
that question because the process for filing of individual claims also falls under Chapter 656.
Yes. And Mr. Chair, Senator Avakian, the workers can file a claim under Chapter 656 in any format that they choose. The chapter is very clear about that. Yeah. A worker can we provide forms for the workers to file claims, but workers, frankly, can write it on a piece of paper, and it can legally hold up. The what we are dealing with here is the filing of coverage claims reporting, other required reporting, which typically would be medical data reporting, those sorts of things, from the insurer to the regulator. The intent in this bill is only in regard to requiring electronic transmission of coverage reporting. However, you bring up a very good question. I think what we would have to do is take a look at this and make sure that we're not requiring something beyond what any of us thought that we were requiring in terms of filing of information from the insurer to the regulator. Now, having said that, it is our intent, and the insurance companies have been working with us to move to electronic filing of claims information that they have, medical information that they have. It's there's a lot of savings there. It's simpler to do, but I think the best answer would be that I'd like to get back to with the chair's permission. I'd like to get back to you and make sure that in terms of looking at this particular requirement, that we're not going beyond the filing of coverage information. That was certainly what we had intended.
Let me just interject. I understand. To me, it almost looked like there was maybe down on LC, they were just changing wordsmithing allow for and putting in require. Because further or earlier in that line, where it says the director may adopt.
Correct.
To me, that's the discretionary part. If we were changing that to say shall adopt, right, then I'd be much more concerned. So let's just, when you review this, find out from LC if they were just using a term of art of require versus allow for, because what I'm hearing that's on the record at this point, the director is not planning on making that type of sweeping requirement of all claims would have to be done by electronically, understanding you may be working to strive that way. But clearly, I think you've heard from the committee that we don't want to see claimants being somehow disadvantaged in how they would actually be able to bring a claim into the system.
Mr. Chair, that makes a lot of sense, and that is not what we were trying to do in terms of the claimants, and I think you're right about that, but we will check that out and get back to the committee with the answer on that. I appreciate that being brought forward.
Senator Abak, any other questions?
Nope.
Any other questions for the panel? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 559? Not seeing anyone coming forward. We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 559. And Ms. Braun, is there anything we need to cover before we adjourn for the day?
No, that's it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
We'll go ahead and adjourn for today, and our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, same place, same time.
Thank you.
Same match station.